Welcome to PR After Hours, your weekly cocktail of news and interviews with leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. So pull up a chair in our virtual lounge. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will be right back after this.
Why do people listen to PR After Hours? Don't take my word for it. Listen to Joel Freund, CEO of Fluax Media.
I'm going on a lot of podcasts, and your podcast, the conversation with you is just so authentic and so real that I actually enjoy it. I don't even feel like it's a podcast.
Follow us now wherever you get your podcasts, or visit PRAfterHours.com and get on our subscription list so you never miss an episode. Today, we're diving into the world of words with Joshua Lysak, a globally recognized ghostwriter and the creative force behind Best Way Persuasion. At the tender age of just 32, Joshua has penned an incredible 83 books and counting for a roster of clients that spans executives, celebrities, and entrepreneurs. He's here to share his expertise on persuasive writing, the art of delivering consistent results for clients, and the evolving landscape of book writing and publishing. He is the author of a must-read book, I have it right here in front of me, on becoming the uncontested authority in your niche. It's called So Good They Call You a Fake. I mean, come on now, with that title, how can you resist? Let's find out why he was accused of being a fake and more as we welcome Joshua Lysak to the virtual lounge.
Hey, I'm pleased to be here with you today.
This title, man, I loved it when I read the book about it, you know, about where you got the title. Do you mind just, as before we get into anything else, I'd love for you to kind of let our listeners know where you got that.
Yes. More than a decade ago, a fellow named Cal Newport published a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You. Just about everyone has heard that saying, originally attributed to Steve Martin, or has heard of, perhaps even read that book, So Good They Can't Ignore You. It once was true that if you are simply competent, you would get attention. You would have influence. If you had a business, you had a personal brand, you would create sales. You would become the go-to person. But in the internet age, where everything is quick and easy, anyone can pay a certain amount of money to be on the Forbes 30 Under 30, a New York Times bestseller, get your own TED Talk. All that's required for the perception of expertise and being so good they can't ignore you is a little capital, which means the equilibrium has changed. If anyone can be so good they can't be ignored, everyone gets ignored. Imagine a single flower rising above all the wildflowers. Everyone's going to notice the one that's higher, right? The tall poppy, right? Perhaps. Well, in today's day and age, all other flowers have caught up to that one little poppy. Yeah. Now, in 2023 and beyond, in order to be so good, you have to be so good they call you a fake. Why? The reason is, having worked in reputation management, you learn a little bit about reviews, ratings, feedback, virality. Negative press goes much, much further, much faster to a much broader audience than positive press does. Same thing with negative reviews. And this is why so many businesses are afraid of getting just one negative review that will tank their average rating. But the first thing I learned, this is a number of maybe about 6-7 years ago, is that consumers attribute the highest credibility to products that are between a 4.2 and a 4.4 star average. Record scratch moment. You mean to tell me that a product needs negative reviews? It needs one-star reviews to make all the positive reviews credible, including scathing reviews that are 5 paragraphs long? Yes. Yes, it does.
Oh, man.
The impetus for writing this particular book was initially watching an interview with the Trickshot channel Dude Perfect, one of the first and best known YouTube channels. They do trick shots that are all manner of zany, from, hey, watch me hit a hole in one. He goes up, whacks it, gets a hole in one. To, hey, let's throw a basketball off a literal skyscraper and watch it go into this little hoop way down below in the parking lot. They drop the ball off the skyscraper through the clouds and it goes in. Ridiculous. So one of the members was being interviewed on Good Morning America, and he said, We love it when people say our trick shots are fake because that means we get even more YouTube views. And then it crystallized. That's been my own story. That's been the story of the clients that I've worked with, why they're able to get such a high profile despite not having, let's say, the educational credentials or the pedigree or the connections or just being right place, right time for fame. That's the reason they've been able to leapfrog so many other people who struggle to get notoriety is because their results are so good. Haters, critics, losers, and envious competitors have to badmouth the results online and say, look at this liar over here. There's no way he's that successful. Hilarious example. I've published earnings receipts showing that I earn more than $1 million a year as a ghostwriter for several years in a row. Every time I do, there are people who reply to that post or will share that post and say, look, it's Photoshopped. See this line right here? He's grayed out. Obviously lying. Look, everyone, look at this. And now what's happening? Now thousands, if not tens of thousands of people know there's a ghostwriter who earns more than $1 million a year. And there's people who are not happy about it. That's the effect of so good they call you a fake.
You know, as a writer myself, and I'm always thrilled with a good solid 4-star review. I don't know about you. I mean, I'll take it. And as a reputation management specialist, that's my day job, a PR guy. I tell clients this all the time. If everybody loves you, then nobody really loves you. You've got to really have some discernment here so you can differentiate a little bit. And it also can, like you're talking about, it can often give you a platform to show and show off your cred, show off your smart, show off your ability. So I absolutely love that. And you know, when you hear it spelled out, because you tell it so well in the book and you told it so well just now, it's like, oh, crap, why didn't I think of that, you know, with the way you've done it? But that's the crux of this book. And you go through it in So Good They Call You a Fake with examples of a lot of your clients who you ghostwrite for. And it just seems so simple when you get down to it. But that's not to say, however, because as you said in the introduction you made earlier, it's not to say that just because you have money, everybody can perceive that you're good. But I wonder, though, as a ghostwriter, though, it's an interesting kind of line you walk, because these folks, a lot of your clients, you know, you're writing the book for them, basically, right? And yet, if the public becomes aware it's a ghostwriter, does that ever change the calculus a little bit? Because they hired somebody, they had the money to hire you, one of the best ghostwriters in the world.
So I talk often about what ghostwriting is versus what it is not. I do this with hypnosis as well, because I'm certified and a trained professional in hypnosis. And I do a lot of debunking about myths and misbeliefs in both of these areas. Hypnosis, people think, is, you know, waving a pendulum in front of someone and getting them to do ridiculous things on stage. That's more of manipulative illusion craft and just plain fun entertainment. And ghostwriting, people think it's, okay, you talk to a celebrity for 2 hours, you read the Wikipedia page, you make up a bunch of crap and then publish it as a book with their name on it. That is what several New York City-based ghostwriting agencies in the top 5 search results on Google do. That's their shtick. We will produce a book for your celebrity client in 6 weeks. It'll be a New York Times bestseller. We need 2 hours of your person's time. Go. So that is a type of ghostwriting that is actually done. And by the way, if you watch interviews with many celebrities talking about their book, it's obvious they haven't read it. They don't know what's in it. And then when the interviewer asks them a question about an experience that's described in detail in the book, they answer it as if they had been asked a different question. That's why they don't know what's in their book. They don't have time to read that crap. They don't have time to write it. They don't have time to read it.
Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, but back in the day, we used to call that, I'm a little older than you, a clip job. They used to call those clip jobs. You familiar with that term, Joshua? Where they would just get clippings. Of course, nowadays we have the internet. See, I'm showing my
age. It's copy and paste jobs. Yes.
Copy and paste. Okay, there you go. Yeah, it's creepypasta or whatever they call it. But I know it's not the same thing. I'm teasing. But I love that. And that's so true. And it's interesting because I do some ghostwriting. I'm not on your level, but I do. And just the idea, though, of that kind of thing, of just kind of kit bashing something together. Oh my God, but that's what most people think. But really, go ahead, tell it from your perspective. What do you actually do with your ghostwriting contracts?
Yes. So what I'm not able to do, because you can't come out and rail against authentic fakes as I do, and then be an authentic fake. I know that's sort of strange, paradoxical territory. Nonetheless, here we are. So I point out what I can't do is I can't make stuff up on your behalf. You need to have a real story, a before versus after transformation that you've been able to do for yourself in your own life, for clients, family, friends, constituents, users, customers, vendors, so on and so forth. And you need to have something that's brilliant, that if I documented it and I teached it to your, if I taught it to your customer base, to your readers, step by step with no step skipped, they will be able to get predictable results that haters, naysayers, critics, and of course, envious competitors will look at and say, well, obviously that's fake. Look at this fake over here, my top competitor getting all these results allegedly. It's literally impossible to be that great. I can't stop talking about how great they claim they are and they're lying. Look, everyone. And that is, in fact, a true phenomenon that happens. I've seen it myself. My clients see it themselves with their books. And so their books are simply a way of allowing their haters to be their most valuable marketers. Look at this loser with this book. Definitely don't buy it. It's only $19.95.
You know, you wanted to be a writer since you were very young. I know that. Yes. And you've written a couple of novels. I know that. And that kind of spun off into the ghostwriting thing from there. And and by the way, folks, again, read this book. You're going to want to. Joshua lays it all out about how he does this. But just for the sake of the conversation for our listener, tell us about that first ghostwriting gig, if you don't mind, and just how you felt about it. And as much as you can tell us about that, because I'm trying to set up a kind of a structure here before the end of this interview where people can kind of get an idea of how this would work for them if they were interested in hiring somebody like you, or indeed if they are ghostwriters themselves.
Yes, I have always thought about writing books, particularly nonfiction books, differently, because I do not have a nonfiction book writing background initially, keyword initially. Yeah. I'm the small independent publishing house published two of Joshua's novels when he was 21 years old. Yeah. And then two people read them and said, Joshua, I want my life story I've been trying to write as an autobiography, but it's so boring. I want to read like a memoir. Reading your book made me realize, oh, maybe it could read like a novel like this. So it could be interesting, a memoir, not a Wikipedia article about my life. Joshua, can you do what you did for your novel and your stories that you made up? Can you do it for my life, but like not make anything, just make it interesting? Yeah. I said, okay, sure. Both of them happened to be business owners. And so there were a lot of business elements, insights, and lessons they wanted to glean from their life story. And you could see the trajectory, the trend, the path that put me on. One referral led to another, and I'm almost exclusively writing for founders, execs, entrepreneurs, investors on their business experience, methods, framework, their key insight that is game-changing, life-changing, industry redefining. That's mostly what I do now. But and we've keyed in on what I do is not ghostwrite books. I create opportunities. I generate leads. I open doors. I prove credibility. I build authority, all in ways that no other marketing tactic, sales initiative, or PR campaign is possible to do, is capable of doing. We have this literal, physical, tangible product that you can send to people that they can buy for $20. They can get a sample of your worldview. Say, I like the way this person thinks. I want them inside my company now, doing all of this that they talk about. That is the primary use case of the books now that I write. And so it used to be a client, tell me what you want to say. Now it's Joshua says to the client, to the author, here's how we're going to structure your book. I need a few stories first. So it's much more so a ghostwriter-led process where the author is filling in the blanks of what works for a book, because I've done so many that have been successful in terms of selling hundreds of thousands of copies, and others that have sold fewer than 100 copies, but half of them were to CEOs on the client's Dream 100 prospect list.
Right.
So they don't care that it didn't make any money as a book, and they gave away half of them. They care that it was seen by the right people. So success varies in terms of that. So what I'd never promise is you're going to make a lot of money from your book. You probably lose a crap ton of money on your book from book sales alone perspective, because only 2.5% of your audience is going to buy the book.
Right.
That's even for a million followers, that's 25,000 copies. If you maybe get a high end, like $5 a book, $125,000 sucks. Yeah. For an audience that size, that really sucks. So you need to be selling them something else that your book is the funnel connector to, going from not having heard of you before, not buying anything from you before, buying the $20 product, and then joining your $99 a month community, or buying your supplements, or signing up for your app for $199 a month, or what have you.
See, Joshua, you just kind of answered the next question I was going to have there, and which is, because I'm literally in the midst of writing an essay for Medium about readers versus non-readers in our society. Yep. And how vulnerable non-readers are, in my opinion, to because they've lack the critical thinking skills are not as strong if they don't read. I just believe that. That's my supposition. Anyway, read all about it later, folks. It'll be out later. Anyway, but what I'm going to say is, so if somebody says to you, look, I've so-and-so CEO worked with you, and he told me at the country club that I got to talk to you, but I don't think anybody reads. But you just answered that question. It's like, it doesn't matter that people don't read, and I'm doing that in quotes here, that people don't, plenty of people read, but you know, it seems to be a declining skill, but or interest at least. What you're saying is, look, I got a guy who what did he do, mail it to 100 people on his dream list, or did he get in front of him at a conference and talk, and that was the after gift? Or is that kind of how people use it?
That's one of the ways. Another way is marketing it as much as they possibly can online to their audience. And then what they will do, the most like financially successful, highest ROI clients that I've had, is they market aggressively online for a minimum of 18 months after publication. And wow. Then they give away freebies inside of the book that are, they have a higher perception of value, the freebies, than the book itself. Like, okay, buy this book and get this free course. Buy my book and there's these bonus upgrades chapters that have masterclasses associated with them. Or with mine, where I take the essence of the book and distill it down to a couple of exercises that you can print off and fill in, and you can begin implementing it right now for your business, for your brand, for your first product idea. People want those free resources, those bonus upgrades, content upgrades. How do you get them? You get on my email list and I tag you with having bought my book. So I know that you have been exposed to enough of my ideas that I can sell you specific things now that you're on my email list that are related to, and they expand on what you learned inside of my book. And so that understanding of a customer journey with buying the book being the first thing, and then those who subscribe via email, that's the heat-seeking missile from a marketer's perspective.
You mentioned this strategy in the book, and you say it's proximity. It's about maximizing book revenue, is multiplying your efforts and selling the same customers more products. So you just nailed that, right? You just said, look, a lot of you listener, you probably, if you don't, you might want to think about getting a course, an online course or a webinar series or other materials, right? Is that's the kind of thing you're saying, is you're like, look, don't, I'm going to say what I think you're saying, and then you tell me if I'm wrong. Okay, Joshua, here we go. You're saying, though, do not look at the book as the end in itself. It's another tool to getting to your ends of making the money you want, achieving the notoriety you desire, or whatever. Is that fair or in the ballpark?
That is. People in my industry tend to want to hype up the benefits of what a book could do. Why? Financial incentives. If you decide, wow, I want all that, I'm going to hire you to write a book. Like it's a naked, obvious sales pitch. So in the name of authenticity, I tell people, if you want to maximize revenue from an information product that you could create quickly, turn around, a $47 masterclass.
Hmm.
That's probably the fastest way to make money from an information product. Like if you actually need money, it's not going to be a book. A book is the thing that you write when you have multiple marketing options you could consider, or PR or advertising or any sort of a thing that you could do to generate leads. Well, should we do webinars? Should we do this? Should we do that? Should we do this? Should we do targeted? Should we do mailing? Should we do all those other things? Think of it this way. You could hire a marketing agency for $10,000 a month for 12 months. After the year is up, the $120,000 that you've paid, everything you've gotten is all you're going to get because it has such a short shelf life. Maybe you got some customers out of it that you will kind of move along a customer journey. Maybe not. It either does or doesn't work. Imagine you hire a ghostwriter, pay them $10,000 a month for 12 months. What do you now have? You have something that you can use as a marketing asset for the next 20 years.
Yes.
And so when you think of it that way, it's superior to many different kinds, many different types, many different ways to invest in and do marketing and advertising. Now, what you do, Alex, when it comes from a PR perspective, one of the things that is most valuable is backlinks from high-ranking websites. So those are another example of a, let's say, a valuable, let's say, real estate, frankly. It's real estate is what it is, where a perceived credible publication with significant traffic is quoting you and is linking to your website or to your profiles, your social media, whatever, that will send you traffic on a long-term basis. From my perspective, now I'm practicing what I preach because I have PR people that I've hired and that I've referred to in the past. So I'm a spender in this category. So I've seen firsthand how what you do in your profession, Alex, is worthwhile. And yet people think, in many cases, they think PR and authorship are like, oh, that's just for when you're already successful and you just have money to blow. We need to focus on advertising and cold calling and cold email and outreach, outbound. Right? They think about these things when it's like, oh, what's obviously going to produce ROI? But a backlink from, let's just pick an example that one of my clients has. He's been in Newsweek a number of times. He gets leads from that 2 years, 3 years later. Hey, I was Googling around, saw you in Newsweek. Like, oh, that was 3 years ago.
Right.
It's the same effect with a book. Hey, I found your book. The one I wrote four or five years ago.
Right.
There's no other marketing campaign that does what PR and what authorship can do.
Oh my gosh. From your lips to us ears. Because so many people, you're right, as you initially stated, though, that people, also the thing I've run into as a PR guy and as a writer is to a lot of people, it's just so intangible. Because, you know, the third party, you know, affirmation that you get, the credibility, it's like, you know, it's been proven time and time again that PR, you know, earned media is what we call it. People trust it more than they do an ad. Right.
Yes.
But here's the reason why, too, is because they generally receive it on their own terms, in my opinion. In other words, an ad is what? It's outbound, like you say. It's just in your face. Buy this car, right? Well, what if we just release something about how this car has the most incredible heated seats in the history of the world? Okay, I'm just, that's a poor example. But that brings you in if you live in Minnesota, right? I mean, you know, your butt's cold. So that's my point. And I think this is fascinating, the way you've approached this, because it sounds to me like, too, and forgive me if it's a dirty word, but it's also some of the precepts of inbound marketing, correct? Where you are pulling people in that sense, like, you know, the HubSpots of the world, that kind of thing.
Yes. And that's going to be the best bang for the buck, frankly, when people are coming to you and saying, hey, I read this of yours. I mean, I think that was actually how you and I connected is I was on a podcast talking about my book because the coast has seen it. Hey, I want to have you on my show. Wrote a review telling everybody about it. So people keep coming to me. Hey, I heard you on Jim's podcast. I read your book. Absolutely loved it. I want to talk to you about working on mine. You know, so that's what interesting, where PR and authorship come together as a synergistic experience, where talking about your book, so having a book and talking about it, authorship and PR becomes extraordinarily valuable, the two of them together, right?
Yeah.
People say, hey, I saw you in Forbes, Joshua. They said I should buy So Good, they call you a fake. The two work together, like in that one sense. Right. I always joke, if you have a book and no one hears a book, I try to do the mixed metaphor for it to be fun. I just botched it, of course, as one does. But I joke, if an author writes a book in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, did they hear the tree fall? You know, something like that. Like, oh, okay. Well, obviously, if no one knows that you wrote a book, well, you didn't actually write a book for all intents and purposes.
Tell me about it.
And so PR becomes necessary. Now, if you have a massive audience, 2.5% of your audience is going to buy the book. Well, if you don't have a massive audience, go get one. Go borrow one. And that's where good old PR professionalism can really help out.
PR, obviously PR practitioners listen to the show as we small, mid-sized businesses. That's our demo mostly. And so these are wise words. And I hope it's an affirmation for you to keep on trucking with what you're doing if you're in the PR biz. I know sometimes you feel like you're shoveling crap from a seated position and nothing's happening, but it does come back. And to Joshua's point, listener, just the other day, somebody on LinkedIn, of course, you know how that goes, but on LinkedIn, somebody DM'd me and said, I just read this piece you were quoted in. Piece was from 2011, wow. Joshua. Can I ask you can I shift gears here? Because I know we're running out of time. And I want to ask you, this is really more of a the perks of owning, of having my show is I get to kind of go to like the doctor here. Cause so the doctor is in, here we go. I need to ask you about this. So as I said, I do some ghostwriting. I'm not on your level yet, but I had this experience just recently. I got requests for proposal from two different people in the same week, which is for me unusual. Both were business owners, both wanted the book, you know, and they both, and I talked about my approach, which by the way, is like yours. I'm like, you know, we're not going to do this thing. I was born in a shack in rural Kentucky. We're going to start with something interesting about you. You know, they're like, oh, that's a good idea. You know, all that. So everything went great. They both wanted proposals from me. And long story short, here we are 7 weeks later. Well, one of them turned out to be an absolute tire kicker. They just like to be wooed. And I get it. Fine. Whatever. Not happening. The other one's haggling over price. Curious about marketing my services. The guy just kind of, I'm more or less starting. I mean, I've been doing this kind of work. I've been writing and being in PR for 30 years, but I'm really trying to go into, make my foray into writing business tomes and memoirs like we're talking about today. Any advice for me on those types of folks?
So the question is, how might you get ghostwriting gigs for autobiographies and memoirs, like amongst the sort of people that you're already pitching to?
Right.
Well, I think I would start with, and by the way, so this advice is going to be specific to you, but it's also going to be global and universal in that I'm thinking about creating a product or service in for these people that offers this. What do you think? The answer is going to be roughly the same. It's just, it has a similar pattern. So the question is, why do people buy that service or product already? Why do they buy already? And by the way, it's never obvious. Well, I've always wanted to write a book. No. The usual frame of this conversation is the customer is always right. Yeah. The reframe is the customer is probably lying. The reframe is the customer is probably lying.
Okay.
The reason we say we buy versus the reason we actually buy is very different. The reason, particularly a high net worth or ultra high net worth individual, authors a memoir, much less hires a ghostwriter to do it, is something like, what did all of this mean? What did I sacrifice so much for? Was it worth it?
Right.
Did I leave the legacy I thought I did? It's self-validation. Because the people who are able to afford a ghostwriter to write their story are not doing it for a business reason. I want to sell a million copies or I want to make $1 million. That's people who come to me and say, Joshua, I got a six-figure ghostwriting budget. We want to generate leads for our new software, and we want to get this placement in these places. We want to have speaking gigs at these stages. So we need a book, right? That's a very different conversation. They don't frankly care as much about like legacy or whatever. Like, well, I don't even mind if it's not true, Joshua, just say it. Then we have to have a conversation about being an authentic fake versus being a fake in the good kind of way, in the so good they call you a fake sense of the word. But for memoirs, your best pitch is going to be something like, you can reframe their extraordinarily boring life and milquetoast accomplishments into the greatest story ever told. That's your pitch as an autobiography ghostwriter for a high net worth, ultra high net worth individuals, right? And being as bold and blunt about it as I am is rather unpopular. So you probably will not hear other ghostwriters, particularly autobiography and memoir ghostwriters, say this. But that's why they're buying it. They will say things like, well, I want my kids to read it. If just one young person reads it, it'll be all worth it. Lie followed by lie. That's not why they're doing it. That's not what they're buying. They're buying something that they can't get any other way buying anything else.
Right.
And that is the validation. Looking back over their life. And by the way, there's usually something that's happened in their life recently that's brought all of that into question, where they have a moment where they realize, I regret everything. Sometimes it's an estrangement with a child. Perhaps it's a grandchild leaving the religion of their family, and they were the chosen one, for example, who's going to be so successful. Or someone already squandering their pre-inheritance that they've gotten, bringing shame upon the family. Or perhaps they're finally going through the divorce and their mistress was finally found out after all these years. Or there's something that's happened in their own health, perhaps, where they were at they had a mild heart attack, for example. There's something that has got them to question everything. And that's why they hire a memoir ghostwriter.
That is fascinating. But I like the point too about reframing who they are, make them the hero of their story, of their own life story, that kind of thing, right? Have you found that's really good advice. Thank you. Have you found though that are there people though that you talk to who are the high net worth or ultra high net worth people who think they want a book and then they meet with you and then you talk them out of it by being very candid with them in the sense that, oh crap, this is not what I thought it was going to be?
I do the best that I can to talk as many people out of writing a book as possible because we don't need more ego stroking books that are just simply existing for the author's little ego trip there. Or I had this great idea for a book. I would love to. Plus, people who have that level of depth of insight in the world and that level of self-awareness. Hey, I read How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I want to write a book called How to Win People and Influence Friends. It's going to be a mega national bestseller and sell 5 billion copies in the first year. I'm going to be on Oprah. I have had those conversations with people. They usually work a minimum wage job. Somehow they have gotten past my filters. So I have done what I can to create not an ideal customer profile in my mind and in my marketing in the real world, but a, you might say, deplorable customer profile. The opposite of what you want. And right. So if you do what you can to repel as quickly as possible, to trigger emotionally people you do not want as clients, you will find yourself passionate, ideal customers coming to you saying, I love what you say. It's hilarious. Let's talk.
You know, I found too that, and I, not just in my writing stuff too, but in my PR, running my own agency the past 14 years, is the same thing is because... You really do develop a filter of the types who are going to be a PETA, a pain in the ass. Okay. Right. And, you know, and if they get in, they wear you down and they pay you enough. Okay. You're going to pay. You don't say it directly, but you're thinking, okay, I'm going to sign them, but they're going to pay the PETA tax. Right. But you're probably at a point in your career where life's good as far as, you know, plenty of projects. You probably don't have to deal with anybody you don't want to at all. But there's plenty of folks out there, probably, you know, yours truly included, who have to take a few gigs they don't want to. But I love that. So that's kind of the pain in the ass thing, though. Is that something you can just instantly kind of get through and move them along?
Yes, yes. And part of it is also knowing what to talk about when you're like marketing and don't talk about your services. So I teach this concept called the very important person, the VIP of the VIC, the very important cause. So what is your cause? What is your cause? My cause is anti-persuasion, manipulation, propaganda, misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation that are making it impossible to know what's true, or at least true enough how to orient ourselves in the world. Because it is deadly. It is deadly to live and choose and believe and work based on false information.
Right.
Now, that's what my TED Talk is about, by the way. That my information environment growing up as a millennial child of the boomer generation, parents and society, go to a good school, get good grades, you'll get a good job, be a good employee, you'll get good raises, you'll get good promotions, you'll have a good retirement, everything will be good. False, 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 false. But that was my information environment. It was propaganda that I had been led to believe, but it hadn't been true for at least 20 years. So I had to reorient myself. There are institutions, there are organizations, there are individuals that profit greatly from toxic information in the information environment in any industry, be it education or book publishing or what have you. So cleaning up a toxic information environment by calling out, identifying the diseases of propaganda and manipulation that happen in public, that's my very important cause. So people follow me online because I talk about this versus I'm a ghostwriter. You should hire me to write a book. I'm a ghostwriter. Hire me to write a book. That is so boring. No one would want to follow me. How could I build an audience around that?
Right.
So my advice to you, Alex, and to everyone else who wants to make a great living using the internet, Wi-Fi money, whether you have an agency, a personal brand, product, services, goods, doesn't matter. What's your very important cause that you could be the champion for? That when people follow you, they want to follow you because you're talking so much, so passionately, so often, so deeply about a topic they care a lot about, and they can feel good knowing that someone's got them covered. That's me on propaganda, anti-persuasion, manipulation, and hypnotic techniques that are from my own profession that are deployed to hurt people intentionally.
You've got kind of a James Randi vibe going here then. I mean, didn't he kind of blow up a lot of the, a lot of these things? You know, are you familiar with James Randi, the late?
Yes, he was called James the Amazing Randi. He had that whole, show me your proof of the supernatural and I'll pay you $1 million. No one ever got the money, so I ended the contest. That was his debunking shtick.
Right. But the point being is, like, what you're saying, though, I believe, is you are not your service.
That's,
you know,
right.
What I'm saying? That's what it is here. And that's the thing. You're right. And that's the thing, too. I've been told, too, because I do write about a lot of things on my Substack. And I, by the way, read my Substack is the latest version of read my blog, which really actually is listen to my podcast is in between the two. But anyway, I digress. But the point is, yeah, people know me. They go, especially around here, my market. Oh, that's that podcast guy, or that's the guy who writes about all this stuff. And I actually had a reader say, you know, you don't seem to write a whole lot about PR on your Substack. And I said, well, because it's what I do, and I have thoughts on it, and I'll write about it occasionally, but I don't think it's all that interesting to write about, first of all. Right? Do you want, Joshua, do you want to read my piece on PR? I doubt it. I mean, most people don't. So I appreciate
that. So what's important is to know what we can hire you for, and that what your service is useful to the people who resonate with your content.
There you go.
So I often get, Joshua, I love your thread about that thing. I've always wanted to write a book. I think you're the guy. That's where the connection comes in. So you want to champion a parallel cause to, or rather, the people who care about that are also the sort of people who tend to buy your thing. And also, the people who are enemies of your cause are your deplorable customer profile.
Yes. And they'll call you fake. You know, they'll tell you you're
fake.
That's right. The book is so good, they call you a fake. Command attention, monetize your talent stack, and become the uncontested authority in your niche. Joshua Lysak. It's a great book. It's not a doorstop. It's to the point, just like Joshua is. And Joshua, how do people, besides buying the book, which there'll be a link in the show notes, but how else do they learn more about you and get into what you're doing?
Yes. So my official shenanigans are over at lysakghostwriting.com. But my most up-to-date stuff, video content, would be on YouTube, Instagram, any of the places where one might find visual content. But my most interesting, juicy, perhaps, content is going to be on Twitter, now called X, at Joshua Lysak. That's where I talk about persuasion in public.
I like it. And I've dipped in. If nothing else, listener, he will challenge your perceptions. And that is something in short supply in this country these days. And Joshua Lysak, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate you sharing all your, and I mean this when I say this, I don't like to use this word very often, your unique insights into what you do and what you offer and the way people can rethink who they are in the marketplace. And listeners, get out there and get this book, So Good They Call You a Fake. Thanks, Joshua.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You know what that means? It's last call here at the Virtual Lounge. Be sure to visit PRAfterHours.com for links to what we discussed in this episode and more. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next time for another round at PR After Hours with Alex Greenwood.